Welcome to episode 212 with Naomi from Runaway June, Naomi Cook. Which by the way, you haven't done much by yourself, huh? That was the big, that was what I heard, that you three were like, I don't know if we can do it by by herself.
No, I think that's a little misconception. We don't do, I mean, we're just doing music stuff right now. So we don't, you know, if you'd asked me to come over here and play songs, I'd be like, well, you know, the girls can come. But yeah, we do stuff. It's important to have individuality.
You could have played the Christmas party tonight.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, we have Travis Denning playing.
Should
tonight.
Ask me.
He's going to come play.
He's much better.
Yeah. I guess reading some stuff about you that I didn't know. Because like we know each other a little bit. Not a little bit.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned before we went on here that you mentioned meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that you meditate at the top of mountains. Is that true?
I have before.
Is that an everyday thing? Do you find your nearest mountain?
Try to find a mountain every day.
Yeah.
No, I really get a lot of healing and fulfillment from nature. And so I'm outside as much as I can be. I mean, it's kind of odd, but when you're on the road, I mean, you kind of know this, but you don't get to get out as much as people think. You know, you're traveling a lot, but you don't really get to see as much. So when I'm off the road, I'd kind of go back out and travel and try to see spots that I haven't been to. And I really love to meditate in nature if I can.
Isn't it crazy? You bring up a point that I think maybe people don't realize, that as much as we travel, because I was in Vegas, I did one show in Vegas and it was out and they were like, how's Vegas? I was like, it could have been any city.
Oh, yeah.
The crowd was great,
mm-hmm.
and I love the venue, but you don't do anything except go, sound check, meet and greet,
yeah.
do the show. You're so exhausted. You go to bed, then you get up and you do it again, you know, in another city.
Yeah, I mean, and it takes a lot. It takes real intention to get outside of that little wheel, because if you don't, you'll just get in that little wheel and you get really depressed. Like, depression is a real thing out there. You're on the same people. You're in the same routine. So I make an effort every day to like try to break that routine. I get off the bus kind of before anyone wakes up and I just kind of do my
own. Oh, are you early morning, Naomi?
I'm an early riser. Yeah, I am.
And I wake up at 3:30 or 4 every weekday, but I do it because I have to.
Yeah.
Never because I want to. I would sleep until noon every day if I could, but you're not like that.
No, I really just enjoy that time of the day a lot. It's like quiet. No one's blowing up my phone yet. Like, I really like watching the world wake up. It's like kind of, it's a meditation in itself. It's kind of spiritual, I think.
So walk me through this. You come home, you have a few days off. You try to find a spot. Is that it? I'm going to go and find some.
I have a spot in my house.
Some woodland. No, some woodland area.
Yeah.
Squirrel's nest.
I've meditated in my yard a couple times. I think like meditation, some of the masters of meditation tell you to get in touch with nature, like get barefoot or take a walk or something. It doesn't have to be elaborate. So yeah, I've meditated in my yard. There's a little spot in my house that I find really, there's like a good energy there or something. And so I kind of do it there. I haven't meditated outside since I've been home.
So I have some friends that do transcendental meditation, and I have some friends that meditate with the app. And they believe in mm-hmm. it so much. They're all mm-hmm. slightly different.
Yeah.
But they believe in it so much. I have never meditated in my life.
I tried.
Oh, I had some severe PTSD for a long time where I got jumped and I got held at gunpoint. I had some real issues with that. My house broken into. And so the doctor was like, hey, you should really try to meditate. Because I tried everything.
Because you had, okay, yeah.
Because
you
I just.
Stressed out about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was literal PTSD where I'd been on drugs. I'd tried all this medication, nothing was working. And the doctor was like, you just have to meditate, like try to meditate. I would sit on the bottom of my bed and I would try as hard as I could. And you know what would happen? I would close my eyes and go, I no wonder which episode of The Office is on right now. Or I just couldn't separate myself from...
You know what? I'm not going to try to psychoanalyze you, but...
Go ahead, hit me.
But you're such an achiever, I think, that you're trying to achieve something through meditation. And that's like not really what it's about. When you start,
I want to win meditation. How do I win at meditation?
Like, nothing's happening. Why am I not levitating? Like, come on, Bobby. It's just to quiet yourself. I mean, I don't have PTSD from being robbed. I can't imagine, but I'm sure meditation helps a lot of people with that stuff for sure.
But what is the purpose? And I ask this as serious and sincere as possible because I just couldn't do it. What is the purpose of meditation, like to you and in general?
To me, I guess I can only speak for myself. To me, I'm so overstimulated most of the day that it's just a moment for me to quietly quiet my mind, quiet all the voices that are at me all the time, my own included, that's the loudest most of the time. Just gives you a quiet space and you can back up and watch all of that stuff happening and not be involved. And it, man, it just really gives you a perspective view of like, it really helps me make clearer decisions.
And you don't go, and how long do you meditate?
11 minutes.
Because I'm really, longer. I have a lot of questions now.
Okay.
But okay, 11 minutes, it's okay. I could probably do 11 minutes.
10 to 15.
I thought you do like an hour.
I mean, some people do. I haven't achieved that yet. I'm like, okay, I'm good at about 20. Sometimes it feels like an hour though.
Hmm. The only time I've ever been able to really separate myself was because I don't drink and I've never like done an illegal drug. I wish I would have done all of them. Like I just know I would do them all at once, right? I just know I would be the winner of doing drugs and drinking.
I asked you that before one time. We were backstage somewhere and I said, oh, you don't drink? And you were like, no, I don't. I said, you're just not interested? And you were like, no, I'm very interested.
Yeah.
I'm too interested.
Yeah, it's not a moral thing. It's like I just know I would be the champion drinker or champion. But the only time that I've ever felt like you're talking about, I would go to the dentist and that would get so high on laughing gas.
Oh my God.
No, I'm not kidding. I'm not being facetious one bit. And I would be able to separate all my worldly problems. And I actually was like thinking about the meaning of life. It was the greatest moment of my life.
It's pretty amazing those chemical releases are within yourself. Like I'm not going to try to get all spiritual and weird, but it's like, you can really unlock that stuff in your own brain. It's.
Do you feel like I do on laughing gas without laughing gas?
I don't know how you felt.
It was the greatest. I just thought,
definitely feel better. Definitely feel better. It does feel like a drug sometimes when you're that overstimulated. Then in 11 minutes you're able to really calm yourself down. You feel like a completely different person.
Do you sleep well?
At times I do. I'm not a great sleeper. I sleep better when I meditate. I've been ice bathing too, which has been insane.
All right, here we go down this trail.
Have you done that?
No, God, no. Why would I want to be cold? I don't like cold anywhere. I don't like cold outside. I don't like cold inside. And if it is cold, and I will keep my air down, but I keep a blanket over me. Why in the world would you get in an ice bath?
Oh, man, the benefits are wild. It's another thing. It's an antidepressant. It like the thermal regulation for your body is where you get like all this incredible, you get your nutrient blood. So, I mean, it's got anti-arthritic, anti-carcinogenic. It really helps your skin.
Where are you getting this ice?
Incredible.
You going to the gas station or just getting them out of the...
Yeah, lately.
Yeah, and they're just dumping in your bathtub? So it's not like
I'm going to buy an ice machine though. I mean, it's getting very expensive.
So you take ice baths?
Yeah.
For how long?
3 to 6 minutes. You're getting the real benefits at about 2 minutes.
And that doesn't feel miserable to you?
Oh yeah, it's miserable. But when you get out, you just get like this rush that you're like, it's a mental
finding
rush too because you got
no,
to.
No, you get a rush because you're getting back to normal. Yeah, it's like this feels so great being a normal human.
It's incredible.
With
you're gonna do it. I can tell.
No.
Yeah.
I would a bit. I played football in high school. And we would have to get an ice bath, and I would be like, this sucks. And
I mean, every major athlete does these ice baths.
That's why I quit.
Have you heard of cryo?
Mm-hmm. I've done cryo when I was doing Dancing with the Stars, and my feet and my knees were hurting. And I don't know that it worked,
same thing.
But I don't know that it didn't, right? So like I would go and do the cryo and I would get in and you get up to your neck and they go, and it's cold. But then you get out and you're like, maybe it did not work. So why don't I keep on?
I've heard that there's a difference between that and actually water submersion. Because your body's made up of mostly water, there's like a difference there.
When you have kids, because you don't have kids, right?
No.
When you have kids, are you going to do natural birth like in a creek or something? Is that kind of the thing? Like you're gonna meditate?
Well, you know, it's funny. Six were born underwater. My mom had all of us at home. All of us were born at
home. And I'm asking six that really. Like I know
yeah,
you
I
think
will.
I'm
Actually,
smiling.
Yeah, I'm gonna do an at-home world of birth. Yeah.
I'm really asking.
I'm answering.
Is that a thing?
100%.
So why would you do it underwater? Like, what's that benefit?
Well, the pain level is cut in half. And the baby, it's really a lot healthier for the baby. It like really pulls back on all kinds of things that can happen during childbirth. Tearing. Oh, you want to get into this?
Oh, we can get into whatever you want. Nothing scares me.
So I got to watch 5 of my siblings be born underwater. And you know, there's all this crazy, like, you see on movies, you know, childbirth, and it's pretty horrific in movies, but I never experienced that with my mom. She was like, you know, in a state of, she was really excited to have the baby. It was very calm. My dad was there. All of us kids were watching. And, you know, the baby's in water. So being born into water, it's breathing through.
Interesting. Through the, I didn't think about that.
So like being born into water is not shocking to the baby at all.
I felt like the baby would feel like it was drowning, but I guess you're right.
No.
If it's in water already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. That's how it should be born.
So were you born in water?
I wasn't born in water. No. Right after me, my sister right below me on down were born underwater.
How many siblings?
I have 10.
That's crazy. And I knew that I knew that answer too. I just wanted you to say it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So where do you fall in the list of kids?
I'm number 5. I'm like, I would be in the middle. Technically, Pearl's the middle, the one right below me.
Oldest is how much older than you?
So my oldest brother passed away a few years ago, but he would be 39.
Okay. And your youngest?
This year. And the youngest one is 18. Just turned 18.
Wow.
Yeah. 38. Because we're all even. Half of the year, we're all even numbers. Half of the year, we're all odd. So Christian would have been 38 this year.
And so, and I know a bit of your backstory. A lot of our audience may not yet. But, you know, an interesting picture that you posted was a picture of the bus.
Yeah.
That you put on your Instagram.
Yeah.
I guess maybe 2 months ago or so. Uh-huh. And it was a picture of the bus. And you lived in that bus?
Yeah.
For how long?
We lived in it for like 4.5 years. A little less than 4.5. So 9, I know I turned 9 in the bus. So 8 to 12.
So, and why do you get in the bus and where does the bus go?
How long is this podcast?
As long as we want.
Okay. So we got in the bus. This goes back. My mom was a midwife when I was growing up. And she delivered, we lived among the Amish communities for a long time because she delivered babies for the Amish.
Were you Amish?
We weren't Amish, but we went to church. We were involved in the community so much because of my mom that, you know, to live among them, you have to kind of look like them. And
so some of the Amish sensibilities were,
yeah.
Okay.
So. We lived very plainly, but we weren't Amish. We still had a car. My dad worked for the state park. We were kind of just outside of it, but they didn't really care because my mom was so valuable to these communities. And she was really young. She was like, you know, it was very taboo still, the midwifery thing at this time. And this is before social media and any of that. So she got her mentor had a woman die in childbirth with her, and she got charged with manslaughter, which women die in the hospital all the time with childbirth. And so my mom got scared that it was going to come down on her too. And her and my dad just kind of packed up, sold everything, packed up, and they went on the road. And my mom taught seminars on like natural births and child rearing and living off the land.
And by on the road, you mean they bought a bus and everybody hopped in. And
yeah.
Where were you living when that happened?
We were living in Virginia at the time.
And so yeah. She's like, all right, we're going. And how does she tell you, 8, 9 years old, all right, time to get the bus. We're heading out.
Yeah, we're gonna travel. And all of us were stoked. You know, we were very adventurous kids. My parents let us be adventurous and we were really excited. It was only supposed to go for about a year or two, and then it kept going. It kind of went it started off really good, it ended kind of bad. You know what I mean?
And what are you doing for school though? Like how?
We did homeschooling, and then like the last 2 years, we didn't do school very much, honestly.
What do you do all day as a kid traveling around with the family on a bus?
So we lived in national parks, and we explored, and we played outside. We did schooling like a few hours in the day, and then we were just out. We just played in the woods. I mean, it's true.
So you're sleeping in beds that are, I'm assuming, just kind of built all beside each other?
Yeah, my dad designed the inside. So it was, we had a little kitchen and a little bathroom and then, you know, bunk beds and a little front living area where 2 futons came down. There's plenty of beds. But it's crazy, even for me, in the bus that I'm in now, and how sophisticated that is.
Like the tour bus, not a house bus.
Right.
Right, you're not living in a bus again.
Let's clarify.
Right.
It's crazy to think that we did that for 4 years in such primitive state, you know. It's crazy.
And the bathroom situation on the bus.
We had a bathroom, yeah. And we had a little septic tank. But, I mean, we weren't in it a lot, really, unless we were moving. So we would go outside or, like, in the state park stuff.
Could you build fires and, like, you learned all that?
We were encouraged to build fires.
All the survival tips.
We slept outside.
Oh, you did most of the time?
Almost every night, yeah.
And being in a national park, did the like the park ranger, they like come up and you'd like have a relationship with the park ranger and be like, what up, park ranger, yeah, John?
Yeah, I mean.
So interesting.
Some of them, there were a couple of times, and so I'm really young here at Granite, like I'm 8. So I remember certain bits and pieces of this. Like some of them we were in for a month, some of them we were there for 2 weeks. So like if you have a long stay in a state park, you kind of like go to the corners, right? There's not like a lot of human interaction there. We did meet a couple other families that were living in buses too, believe it or not. And so we would kind of like hang out with them for a little bit.
So, by the way, you have music. I'm going to play a little bit of music and I'm going to come back to this. Let's do Buy My Own Drinks, this song. I can buy my own drinks. Top 5 song for you guys. Yeah, congratulations on that. Let's see here. This We Were Rich song is really good. I have all of them, but I'm just going to pick a few of them right now. I like We Were Rich a lot. Here's this one.
They put in a 20, I thought we were rich. We didn't have it all, but we all thought we did.
And then here is the current single, Head Over Heels. What's your favorite song to sing right now in a show that you do that's in the set list?
There's a song called Trouble With This Town that's been kind of a little bit of a little sleeper. People love it. It's a part in the show where I'm really kind of like jacked, you know, and ready to like perform that one. And it's just really fun. I feel like a rock star.
Well, last night you did a guitar pull. Is that right? With a bunch of folks?
Oh my God. We did a guitar pull with Luke Bryan, Luke Combs,
Riley Green,
and Rodney Atkins. It was crazy. It was nuts. People flip out over these guys. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun.
If, as the lead vocalist, you get a cold, can they hop in a bit and take some of that? Could they, if you blew your voice out, could one of them sing your parts for a show if they had to? Or would you just go, we got to cancel the show?
We've canceled before. It's been really rare. We've been blessed. It's so funny. Every time we go to Vegas, I get sick. Literally every time. I just push through it. Or, you know, we'll crank the harmonies up or something. But, yeah, they don't sing my parts.
That's what we do. We crank the harmonies up.
crank them up, you know.
Crank the harmonies
up. There are little places where, you know, I'll either just change the notes around, too, if I have to.
You guys did Girl Crush at the CMAs last week. It was really cool.
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you.
Part of that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Whenever you are on tour with Carrie, which you guys just wrapped up, does she get you guys a cool end-of-tour gift or what?
Yeah, she gave us this great gift. She had like, she gave us plaques that were kind of like the size of this, and they have pictures of us with her from like the first time we ever met her all the way to the end of the tour, and it was really beautiful. I prefer gifts like that. It's something I'll have my entire life. There was a lot of thought that went into it. I loved it. Thought it was really great.
Let's go back to the bus in the early life.
Okay.
Very intrigued. When does music start?
So my parents started making tie-dye. This is great. It sounds crazy even coming out of my mouth. The seminars stopped, the inflow of that stopped. This is before the internet and stuff, you know. So once my mom kind of moved out of that area where she was famous, it kind of started going away. And so they were getting creative. My dad was kind of working on the road. He was doing like handyman stuff and my mom like fell in love with tie-dye. So she started ordering tie-dyes. And we found festivals. And so my mom and my parents would be selling tie-dye and I would sit out in the festival with my guitar and I have a little bucket and I would play songs like on the street corner for tips, like early. I was 8 and a half, we had one guitar. And that's where it started. I mean, I've been
singing. How did you learn to play guitar? Where was that, the first, here's a few chords. Where does that come from?
There was a girl who was my age in this kind of like hippie commune that we happened upon who taught me like 3 or 4 chords on the guitar. And it just, I just started playing. It's kind of funny. People ask me how I learned. I just kind of taught myself, but I don't ever remember guitar being hard. I just like, I got the chords and I was like, oh, it just really clicked easy. It clicked really quick. Piano was a little harder, but the guitar just felt so natural even when I was little. It was like wrapped around it, you know, it was huge.
At what stage, though, of you being a kid and playing music, do you realize, one, I love this, but two, I'm actually pretty good, and not in kind of an arrogant way, but, oh, I could probably pursue this and this could be a life for me?
Yeah, I was about 9. When I was making tips, I was like, oh, my God, like, you can do this and make money, you know? So I loved it. And there were times where, you know, we were completely broke and couldn't put gas in the bus, and I would go out and play my guitar and we'd get, you know, 30, 40 bucks and we'd be able to move on. And that gave me a lot of confidence as a kid. I was like, wow, I can, you know, I can help my family. Looking back, I'm like, it's a little gnarly, but at the time I was like, I knew then I'd do this forever. I've done lots of jobs in between, but I've always done music.
What's in the jar over here? Is that charcoal vinegar that you milked from an eagle?
This is an herbal infusion.
Taste it. You know, when someone goes taste it, you're not going to tell me anything about what it is?
It's an herbal infusion. It's got tons of chlorophyll in
it. It's not alcohol, right?
No.
Do you know how pissed I would be, Mike, if Naomi's the one, my first
whiskey?
She's like, taste it. Okay, so wait,
it's a little bit bitter, but also kind of sweet.
Is it water-based?
Yes. It's like I guess you describe it as a tea. Come on. It looks like molasses. So dark. Oh, this is a good batch.
No,
okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's actually, no, you know what? It's actually pretty good. So wait, what is this and why are you drinking it?
So this is nettle leaf and oat straw and comfrey. And it's just an herbal infusion mix that I drink when I'm feeling like my body's depleted and worn out. I mean, my mom's been making these for her clients when I was little. I was drinking this in a sippy cup, you know. I'm talking like soup, like this is way before this, you know, Whole Foods was barely a thing then. But yeah, I've been drinking that stuff for a long time. She still drinks them.
Your mom does?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You still close with your mom?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does she have a cell phone?
Yeah, she does.
Hey, don't look at me and laugh.
Unfortunately, my mom has a cell phone.
No, I'm asking these questions with genuine curiosity because I don't know.
She has a cell phone and she has Instagram and Facebook, and it's like, oh, mom.
What does she think about what you're doing and where you've gone?
It's a good question. You know, it's funny. People ask my family, my siblings that, and they're not really surprised. And I don't mean to sound any way by saying that, but it's not like I didn't win American Idol or something like after working at Target. I've been doing this literally since I was little. So I think I'm surprised that I've gotten here a lot of times, but also it's like, you know, I've worked really hard. It's like people ask me, you know, do you pinch yourself? And I'm like, no.
I feel the same way.
I know exactly what it took to get this.
I
I don't wake up and go, how did I get here? Like, I freaking know. And it was a lot of hard work and sacrifice, and it still is. And I know.
I love it that you say that because I, you know, people will be like, can you believe that you're on TV? I'm like, I've been freaking grinding it out, yes. Flying back and forth, killing myself. I do believe it.
It's almost like there's some way that we're supposed to be ashamed to say that. And I think it's because maybe other people don't want to see that grit part that we've had to do. It's not as glamorous, but, you know, they want to think it's kind of like a lottery, but it's just not. It's just not true. Like, you know, this takes lifetime of dedication and giving up a lot and also gaining a lot, but yeah, I don't pinch myself.
So you're in the family bus until what age?
Until I was, let's see, 10, 11, 11.
Okay. Then where do you go?
So we came back to Tennessee, actually, after we got out of the bus. We were stranded in Arizona for like 6 months, and that was really tough.
Why stranded? Run out of money? Are you trapped somewhere?
Yeah, my dad had some really like heavy depression issues, and he started to kind of like crack in the bus, like towards the end. He's like 40. He's like turned 40 in the bus. I think that that kind of pressure, it just really got to him, and he started to kind of lose his mind a little bit, honestly. And he would sleep all day and couldn't work. And depression is debilitating. It's a real thing. People die from that too. So we were stranded there. My mom was like doing everything she could to work. I'm playing the guitar. My brother was roofing with a crew of Hispanic guys. My sister, you know, we were just kind of like trying to survive that. We ended up getting enough money to be able to make it across the state where we had some friends in Tennessee. And we landed in this little like dilapidated farmhouse, but we'd always lived in like broken down homes. Like I don't ever remember having more than one bathroom in our house. But it just felt good to like be grounded again. And like, you know, we had a mailbox and it was like that whole thing. It felt like my parents' marriage might work out. They really started to fall apart towards the end of the bus. So we landed in Tennessee and lived here for a few years. And my brother was in prison while we were in the bus, and he came back to that house and lived with us for a little while. So there's a lot of good memories there, even though to look at it or to be there even then, it was like, you know, pretty gnarly, I think. But I have a lot of fond memories from that house.
As a kid, if you're 13 or 14, and you know, the pressure is, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? What was at 13 or 14 when someone would say, hey, what do you want to be, Naomi? Like, what was your answer to that?
I wanted to be a country singer. So, and it felt, it's funny you mentioned those ages, because that's the age where I started to doubt this could ever happen, because I just didn't know. I thought that, you know, you had to have voice lessons or you had to have rich parents or connected some way. I just wasn't at all. I did get some music lessons from some friends of our family who recognized that I had talent and a hunger, and they wanted me to pursue that. And so they paid for me to have lessons for like 2 months, and that really just gave me more confidence. But I wanted to be a singer. I didn't even know what that meant, but I wanted to be an artist and a singer or an oceanographer.
The always one weird thing you have to want to be as a kid.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, your story and my story definitely have some parallels in the thinking process, because I grew up, you know, a poor kid in Arkansas. Nobody around me did anything near what I wanted to do.
I've heard remnants of your story.
Well, I just never
mostly from other people.
And they're probably wrong. I made the whole thing
probably.
Up. Yeah. I grew up a trust fund kid in Pennsylvania, but I lived, you know, in a town of 700 people in Arkansas, and you know, and it was a food stamp kid. But nobody around me was ever doing what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be a comedian and a radio host, and I wanted to do all these things, but there was nobody to tell me that I could do it. Nobody was there to say I couldn't,
right.
But there was, and I didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you're like, you want to be a country singer, and how do you become a country? I had no connections either. I went and begged to clean a radio station.
Wow.
You know, and so that's what I did, and you know, that's what's interesting about your story is, like, how in the world, when you have no connection to the outside, do you get outside to become a country singer?
So I started gigging. I was about 15.
And what does gigging mean where you are? Where are you in Tennessee at this point?
So we moved to Florida.
Okay, so you're in Florida.
Right. So my brother passed away in a car accident. And my parents' marriage just didn't survive that. And so my mom packed all of us up and we moved to Florida. And she raised 9 kids down there. And we had a greenhouse that we all ran, and we were close to this little island called Cedar Key. Probably like, I say close, but about like 20 miles. And I got a job playing my guitar. There was another kid there that played his guitar at some of the restaurants. And I was like, okay, I think I could do that. And I had a guitar, I had no equipment. And I had some friends there that were like kind of like meddling musicians, I call. That let me borrow some equipment, and I just started playing at some of the local restaurants, and that's where I started gigging.
Would you see big eyeballs when you would sing? Meaning you start singing, they go...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did. I think I got that for a long time. People didn't expect that, I guess, for me to have as much... I really sang with a lot of passion, I think, for my age.
So you're 15 or 16, you're playing shows. Do you kind of feel like, all right, I'm good enough to do this. I just somehow got to find a path.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about going to school. There was a lot of that, too. You know, I just didn't know what the next step was. I didn't really believe that I could go to Nashville. That seems so, like, something
anything
that people
on TV,
don't do.
Yeah, anything on TV right. doesn't feel like normal.
Yeah, like real life. Mm-hmm. Just felt like, how do I do that? Maybe I'm not meant to do that. So I had a little bit of a detour where I got into a car accident. I was completely broke. And I got a job offer to be a deckhand on a salmon boat in Alaska. And so I went up there for...
By the way, are you on Craigslist? Like, how does an offer come through? Like, a random offer to be a deckhand in a state nowhere near you. Like, I
Florida
get it.
To Alaska.
Yeah, if you get an offer at the local Chili's, I get it. It's nearby. There's someone looking for people to come. Like, I was a waiter for a long time. And you're like, oh, you need somebody. I'll go. But it's...
You want to be a bartender?
How do you get a random offer? You're... In Alaska. Where does that job offer come from?
So I'll break it down. So we're in Florida, right? So there's a lot of people that fish. My stepdad, my mom remarried. Sorry, it's a little jumbled.
No, it's all great. I'm following you here.
Okay. So my mom got remarried, and he went to Alaska every year and had been doing it for about 5 years. So he went for the season, and he called in the middle of the night and said that their deckhand had fallen into a fish hold and broke his ankle and couldn't work anymore, and they needed somebody really fast. And
what does a deckhand do, by the way? I mean, I've been on fishing
everything.
Boats.
Everything.
Okay, so
oh my gosh,
a deckhand just
you clean
does
the nets.
All.
You're fishing. You're driving the boat. You're cooking. You literally do everything.
And they wanted you. No offense. You're like 5'3". How tall are you?
5'3".
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're like 5'3", and they want you.
Well, they didn't want me. I was the first one that volunteered. Okay. And I think Rick knew that I had some grit and I was tough enough to like withstand that. I didn't know that I was. I had no idea what I was getting into. This was like the gnarliest, hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I flew up there. I'm glad that I didn't know what it was because I wouldn't have gone. You know, I don't think I would have. So I did that for a summer. And then when I came back, I felt really clear about like, okay, if I can do that, I can move to Nashville. Like I can move to Nashville. I can play music. Like, what if it doesn't work? I'll never be as poor as I was before this. And like what happens if I do? Like, who knows?
Isn't it crazy too? There's such freedom. And I looking back now, being so poor as a kid, I was always like, you know what? The worst thing that can happen is where I am now, and you know, it ain't so bad, and I'm actually pretty good at being poor. I was always like, what is there to lose?
Oh yeah.
Because again, if all this goes away, I had figured out how to survive on very little.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, it was
a very dangerous person.
Yeah.
Someone who has
nothing to lose.
I can go back to nothing.
Yeah.
I was happy there, actually.
Like, mess with
Maybe
me.
Maybe happier.
I felt that way a lot. It was, what's the worst thing that can happen? I go back to where I've already been.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my normal.
Yeah.
So you're in that spot. Again, I hear you say that, and that resonates with me because I felt a bit of the same way through my life. And you're there, and when do you finally go, all right, Nashville we go? And then what car do you go in?
Oh, my God. Okay, so let's see, what car did I have? I bought a blazer that had no AC. So I only made like $5,000 in Alaska, which seemed like so much at the time. I bought a blazer for like $1,200, and my sister lived in Nashville with her boyfriend at the time, and I went and lived in her basement. I drove it up on, I don't know, I think I did this on like $250, literally like nothing. And I got straight to Nashville and I just walked down Broadway and I just handed out these little demos that I had made in Florida and I got a job at Tootsie's like 2 days later.
And so you go and you're just singing at Tootsie's. How many,
mm-hmm.
like a 4-hour spot?
Yeah, doing the 4-hour thing. Yeah. Yeah, I did that. But you know, that one had its own challenges. But I did learn how to like work with a band and work bigger crowds. And like, you know, I learned a lot down there. And then I started working at the airport, which was like a totally different thing, but a lot more money, a lot more chill.
Okay, I'm interested in both of these. So let's start with a Tootsie's. You're working at Tootsie's. Do you see people come into Tootsie's that you go, man, if they, like, and you would know who they were, and you go, man, they just would like what I'm doing, they could actually give me a shot. Did that ever happen where you would see somebody in the crowd? like an artist or a publisher at Tootsie's.
It's funny. I did see Dina Carter come in one time. She was so cool. And she came up and sang with a girl who was singing Strawberry Wine when she happened to like walk in. She was so cool. I never saw artists like that as like, oh my gosh, if they could just, I kind of knew that's not how it worked. And I had met a songwriter in Florida who was in Nashville. His name's Rob Hatch, and he's had some really good success here. And his wife worked at CSAC, and they really, really mentored me. While I was cleaning houses and working at Tootsie's, I was writing, and like they really helped me. But I never saw, I saw like Joe Nichols. You'd be surprised. Not a lot of people go into Tootsie's, but the people that I did, I just knew that's not how it was going to work. It wasn't going to happen like that for me.
What was your song? What was the song that it was like once or twice a night you would sing it and you knew that's where you get a 20 or so? Like you knew that when you sang this one, people were going to throw some real money.
Wagon Wheel.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, I would have people request it and then tell them that it was a $50 song. And they would pay for it every time. They loved it.
Let me back up just 1 second because I do want to get to the airport. When you're on a salmon boat, do you have a boyfriend?
I didn't have a boyfriend, no.
Mm-mm. When you're doing and moving around the country, did you have a boyfriend?
I didn't date a lot. I didn't date a lot. I think that wasn't like my focus.
You salmon know? Catchers.
Yeah.
Like farmers only.
Believe me, there were plenty. It's funny. There were like, here's the thing. When you're in Alaska on that boat, there's not like, if you're having interaction, it's like you don't sleep there. It's you're going 22 hours. You're going absolutely to the legal limit of not sleeping. And then a lot of the other people fishing up there are Russian. And there's some other Alaskans, but you're not interacting. Like you're just fishing. And I never even got onto land. I was literally out for 5 weeks on the water.
Were you ripped, muscular, in great shape?
I was in good shape.
Yeah. What would you eat? Just fish?
Fish, straight out of the net. We had some stuff, you know. Stock. I had, we ate rice, not a lot of grains, mostly fish, mostly raw fish. I mean, it was the best fish, the most nutrients you can get.
That's crazy.
It was pretty crazy.
Okay. So Tootsie's airport. So where and how do you get the job at the airport? Does someone see you?
So a guy that I was playing with, at Tootsie's on Broadway, he kind of told me when we were counting on our tips one night that he was going to start playing at the airport. I'd never even heard of
this. You mean Tootsie's at the airport?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a small Tootsie's at the airport, and you walk by, and it's always somebody singing a bad version of Walk the Line. As you're trying to get to gate 27, and it's some guy singing Walk the Line every time.
So true. It's there.
So he says he's going to work there?
Yeah, so he said he was going to start there, and I was like, why? You know, because I'd been to the airport, and he was like, said I heard the money's way better and like I can make my own hours, whatever. I was like, okay, well, let me know how it goes. Well, about a month later, he came back and I was like, how's it going out there? He was still doing gigs on Broadway. There's like a little club of musicians that do it. And he said, it's going great. I'm making bank. I like love it. I'm not having to perform as hard. And I was like, okay. So I really started to think about that. I was dying to get off of Broadway. It was like just sucking my soul dry. I didn't feel like I was going anywhere. I wasn't meeting anyone. And so I requested if I could just try it. And it started working. And it was so different and so much better.
Was the money better?
So much better.
Why? That's weird.
Because the people that are coming to the airport, a lot of them don't get out to Nashville. So it's like the first little piece of Nashville they see and they're enamored. And they buy your merch and they like love that piece of Nashville. It's like so unique. And, or they think they might be, you know, tipping a future superstar. So I don't know. I just really had a much better experience there. And I only did that about 6 months.
So you're there 6 months, you're paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
You're working, having to go through security every day. Do you have a different badge? They give you a badge?
Like they gave me a little badge, but I mostly had an escort. Yeah.
So if somebody would walk you through, that's so cool. You get walked through at the airport. And then when does it go, okay, I think this is over. Like what was that step?
I started cleaning houses. And I just wanted to get out of the Tootsie circuit. It was just killing me. I wasn't able to write. So I started cleaning houses more, and that allowed me even more time on my own. And then I got a Tyler Farr cut before I had a publishing deal, and it became a single. So I got a little bit of a break.
What song?
Better in Boots.
Okay. Yeah.
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 It didn't get super high on the chart, but it was a big break for me at the time.
So you have no publishing deal?
I had no publishing
And you get
deal.
A single
mm-hmm.
with a major artist?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How'd you get that right? What was that whole situation?
So the songwriter I was telling you about, him and his wife were setting me up on co-writes and trying to get me a publishing deal. And that's how that happened. I just was in a writing room with Justin Wilson and Dave Pittenger.
And so not only does he go, hey, we're going to put this on hold, we're going to cut it, and then it's a freaking single?
Yeah.
So the publishing company start going, oh, she has no publishing deal. We should get on this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. That was a huge stroke of luck. But I do, and I think you believe this too, like luck is preparation meets opportunity only. And I was busting my ass. Still am, but like it was like a break. Okay, you're doing the right thing. It was kind of like a little omen. I was still trying to be an artist at the time. I didn't just want to be a songwriter. I really wanted to be an artist, but I was doing the solo thing. And I did a showcase, and Benny Brown came to that. He used to own our label. And he called me a couple weeks later, and he said, hey, I know this girl. She has a hit with Eric Pasley right now. She's a great writer. I want to see if you'll write with her. He loved my voice. He thought I was a star, but he didn't like my songs at all. And I was like, sure, I'll write with her. And he introduced me to Jennifer Wayne.
So you guys get together.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, though, do you have a publishing deal? Like, are you able
I did have a pub. Well, I waited. It really kind of happened quickly. So I got the Tyler Farr single. And then my record deal, like, came very shortly after. Like, we were offered a record deal kind of. I was still writing. I was writing with Jen at this time. It happened, like, within, like, 2 months of me getting the single.
Let me back up 1 second, because I used to clean houses too. My grandmother and I would clean houses.
Did you?
Well, yeah. And so whenever I always tip the cleaners.
You still
hotel
do?
Yeah.
Good for hotel, you, Bobby.
But does that affect you when you're staying in hotels or whenever you're staying places? Like,
I always strip the sheets for them. I leave tips whenever I have cash.
And you have to leave it on the pillow, because if you leave it somewhere else, sometimes they don't know if you left it for
I'm
them or not.
I'm nervous that someone else is going to find it.
What's the worst case scenario, though? Someone else does find it, they keep it?
Right?
Like, somebody...
You know, it's funny. I heard a comedian say this one time, where everyone's like, I'm not going to give that homeless person money. They're just going to spend it on booze and drugs. And he's like, that's what I'm going to spend it on at the end of the day. Like, look at this homeless guy. He's going to spend it on it. Like, what do you want him to do? Buy a CD rack for his box? You know, it's funny. Yeah, God forbid someone else finds it. Like, someone needs it.
So, yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's affected your... Because I waited tables for a long time.
Me too. Uh-huh.
Which everybody should have to be a server at some point. When I'm president, I think, you know how a lot of countries make you serve? I'm going to make everybody be a waiter so they can understand...
Customer service.
Yes, the plight of having to deal with people.
Oh, the humility that comes with that.
But it also is such a great tool for life. And then, you know, I feel like I tip because I wanted to be tipped.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually know what that's like.
Do you tip someone that gave you bad service?
Yeah, absolutely.
You do?
I give them even more.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I pride.
Really?
Because I was a waiter, and there would be times where I sucked, but it was not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I also am in the place now where I finally have a good living. Like, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
There's no reason not to tip.
Yeah, there's no reason to tip somebody 50, 60%. Because the times that people would come in that were in my situation, they would tip me, I could make an insurance payment much quicker because of that. Like, it was life-altering.
Yeah.
Because I was living week to week.
Yeah.
And when someone would come in and give me $20 as a tip, it would change the whole week for me. So I feel now like I wish that I'm just doing what I wish someone would did. I'm no bleeding heart great guy. I just wish that people had done that for me, and some did. So now I'm kind of planning myself back in time. I feel like I'm just tipping me back in time.
Yeah, I feel that. I had some people really, really help me out. I mean, I've had so many people that have helped me. And it matters, and little things like that. Like,
well, even the person paying for your lessons.
Oh, huge. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Like in two ways.
I gave them credits in the album. I
was, really?
Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't think that I would be here without people like that.
It does two things. One, you got some lessons, but I think the bigger picture was you saw that someone cared enough to actually invest in you, which makes you want to invest in other people mm-hmm. too the same way. Mm-hmm. And so that's so cool you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it didn't really like, I always knew that I was like, if I get a record deal, if I get this stuff, like I'm going to credit these people. You know, they were kind of the only family that we ever had really too. My parents weren't close with their families and they were the only type of aunt and uncle I knew. It's huge. Very, very big.
Okay, back on. We're bouncing, but we're good. We're following
I'm
it.
Sorry,
no, I'm bouncing kinda, too. Okay. I'm bouncing too. Okay, so you and Jennifer Wayne, excuse me, decide, and I've known Jen for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she also played tennis with one of our best friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a friend who's a professional tennis player.
Okay.
And but her last name wasn't Wayne.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, dude, do you know Jen Wayne? He's like, yeah, but her name, when she played tennis, she was going
Jennifer
by
Kuehl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's her real last name, yeah.
And so you guys are writing, and you're going to become a duo?
No. No. We were just writing songs.
Okay.
And we were writing with another girl. It was another girl, you know, Caroline Hobby. Mm-hmm. Caroline wrote a lot of the songs that we have. And when we went in and wrote, when we went in and played those songs for the label, Benny Brown offered us a deal as a group.
Okay.
Right then, which I knew he had that cooking all along. Here I think I'm writing for me, you know, and he's like, no, I'm going to get this group together. It had to happen naturally. And I'd never even considered being in a band. I don't know why. It just never crossed my mind. But I knew right then I was being offered an opportunity, like the one. And I think too, I'm like, you know, you're like a bratty kid. You know, you're gonna ask for a bike. Like I want a pink bike. And then, you know, God gives you a black bike. It's a bike. Like take the bike. You know. So that's how I looked at it. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna do this band thing. And I had a lot of people like, what? You know, you're gonna do this, and you should just keep on doing what you're doing. Just keep on. I was like, I don't think that's the right thing. So we got offered a record deal as a group with Caroline, and we got into it down the road, and she was like, you know what, this is just not really my path. I don't think this is for me. Happened really fast. Like Caroline kind of really knew right away. She was like, I'm not going to be doing this. Like this is not my path. And so Jennifer knew this girl, Hannah Mulholland, who was an incredible songwriter, and she brought her in to write with us. And we asked Hannah to join the group. Once we had written a few songs, she was incredible. Sang low harmony. She was great. So that's how this band formed that way.
So if you're the hippie one, you're the hippie one. You're the hippie one.
Okay.
You're the hippie one. You don't think you're the hippie one? Mike, don't you think you're the hippie one?
I would say so, yeah.
What would you say? That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
No, I don't think it's bad.
You have a bandana on your arm.
It makes me hippie.
You have a crystal on your neck.
You have
a wolf on your shirt.
Like, all right, fine.
You're the hippie one. Okay, what do you want to be, the hipster one?
I would say I'm like a little earthy, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Whatever. I'm drinking herbs over here.
If you're the earthy one, what is Hannah?
Hannah's got like this like 70s like.
Would she be more hippie than you then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like there's different kinds of hippies.
I only know the kind that do a peace sign and go to Woodstock.
Hannah definitely has some hippie vibes. She's like a vegan, and she's kind of like earthy too. She's from Malibu. She's like.
Is she like surfer hippie?
She's not like very coordinated. I don't think she could surf, but yeah.
But beach hippie.
Beachy, yeah.
You're earth. Like all the dwarves, seven dwarves had all the
things. Yeah, you're like
earthy June. She's beach hippie June. What is Jen Wayne?
Jen is Mama June. She's like the mama hen. She worries.
She is a worrier.
She worries.
She'll text me and be like, hey, I heard this. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Is this
It's so sweet. You know, she really is like one of the most empathetic people I know. And she's very sensitive to like energies and feelings and stuff. And She's also very kind of ethereal. She's very like light. She's kind of like a little angel. You know, when you see her, she's like tall and blonde and like looks like this. It's funny. She tells everyone that she's Peruvian. Her grandmother is like full-blooded Peruvian. And Jen looks like a Nordic, like.
Yeah, she could be from Sweden.
Amazonian, yeah. You know. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's how I would describe Jen. I think that's accurate.
And you guys are still getting along?
Yeah.
And do you have boundaries?
Yeah.
That's because the boundaries are actually really good for relationships.
Oh, yeah.
More so than a pillar to divide.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, we do counseling. We have before.
Good it's for like, you. I love that.
So important.
It's such a great part of growing.
Totally.
Is to have someone that's... Go, keep talking, because I'm such a big therapy
I'm
person.
In therapy all the time. Yeah. I do therapy as much as I can. Here's the thing. We're not just a band. We're married. You know, we're legally bound to each other. We share money. We make all of our decisions together. You know, we have we have employees. That racks your relationship. Really can rattle you. There's like little things. There's all these personalities. We're very sensitive people. We're, you know, emotional and sensitive and creative. And we all have these ideas. And we're all very different. And we're all very, very alike. So, you know, a small decision or a big one can like rattle you. You have to really, really know each other, be extremely considerate, communicative, compromising. And you're not born with those skills. You know, you have to learn them. We treat it like it's a marriage. I know a few other people who are actually in marital counseling in their band. It's like for a marriage.
I know bands too that go in. Because again, if you want to perform at a high level, your mental capacity's got to be in that spot, and to do that, you got to be in a healthy place.
Yeah.
So it's a business decision.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Otherwise,
with
you're making emotional decisions, which will wreck your life.
My therapist, she lives near here, but she does relationships only. She does couples.
Mm-hmm.
I go on by myself. I'm the first person she's ever had go on by themselves, and I sit in a chair, and so it's like me and you if we were in together, and she's over here, but there's no one in that other chair.
Interesting.
And there's, but she's never. We're kind of like an experiment with each other.
Do you talk to someone else?
No.
You talk to her, but you sit. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because that's just her normal room, and she doesn't ever do solos.
Never.
No, she just, I'm the only guy. I'm the only.
You're like two people. That's how much.
Maybe that's what it is. I have to pay
that's
double.
That's why she took this on.
And she thought it was interesting.
It's like, you're like two screwed up people. I'll take you.
I was like, hey, it's a lot. And so she's like, okay, let's try. In the first couple weeks, and I've been with her now for months, but the first couple weeks that I went in, we were like, let's see if we both want to do this. I'm just such a big believer, and I need somebody from an outside that doesn't have an investment in my personal life.
Oh, God.
To lead me places. I don't need you to tell me. I don't need you to take me there all the time. Just sometimes repoint me in a direction. Let's see where I go.
I am sure that you get this all the time. Like, people are like, have you read this book, or are you reading this book? But there's this book, and it's called The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. It's incredible. It like talks about your emotional self and how people are not in touch with that thing. This is what my therapist is teaching me. You make emotional decisions when you think you're being rational. It's so crazy. People are very complicated. And I think the first mistake that you can make with someone is thinking that they're not complicated. And especially yourself, like when you're like, oh, I'm kind of like a simple guy. I've only got it, you know, these certain things, or in particular about these things, but not this. It's like, you're so wrong. People just don't even know themselves. So therapy has helped me a lot in that way, to like get to know my emotional self, because you, in this job, we're emotionally stimulated and triggered all the time. And then you're set with like this big decision to make that involves a lot of people. And if you're not careful, like, you'll just really, really slip. And maybe you will. I know I have, but it's something we have to be on our toes about, because people are all around you, and you're, there's no one way to do this. And so you just have to really be in touch with yourself and think.
Mine just has me challenging negative thoughts. I leave going, I need something I can come back with. I need an execution point.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I leave, like, what do, like, give me something to work on.
Yeah.
I left yesterday.
Negative thoughts.
Well, just check, because my question to her was, and she was like, oh, no one's ever asked me that. I was like, hey, can you grow out of trauma? Like, can you, with, you know, let's say something happened to me at 12. It was pretty awful. I'm 39. Like, I should be able to shake that by now. And she's right. Like, you know, it's not that you grow out of it. So the answer is no, but you can have so much positive things kind of outweigh where you start to think differently about it because so much good has happened. Where if you have trauma that happens to you and it's a big part, it's a major part of your life and your decisions, it is, you know, if it's 70% of your thinking process, that's a wear. She goes, but if so much good stuff's happening to you, the trauma's still there, but you're starting to see, oh, great things can happen too.
Does that mean that when you start to see other things that are good, you maybe start to understand that thing that gave you trauma?
A bit.
Which is super powerful, right?
Yes. You know, and even when you say see things, we were talking yesterday, not to go full therapy on it, who cares? But
let's have a therapy session.
Yeah, right. It was, because she's a love, not she's not a love doctor, she's a doctor. She's a real life doctor.
No wonder you're going by yourself.
That's what she works. That's her thing, relationships, right? Okay. And she's like, you know, here's why you're not good at relationships. You've never seen a successful one.
Interesting. Like, yeah.
I never knew my dad. My dad left when I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old. My mom remarried and divorced. My mom died. My grandmother and grandfather.
How old were you?
She was 46. She died from drugs, alcohol.
How old were you?
Older-ish, but she was always an addict. So I never knew her not being an addict.
Wow. Do you have siblings?
I have a sister.
Okay.
And then like a half-brother through a dad. I don't know. I have an Arkansas family where they're kind of sprinkled all over in different ways. I have like an 8th cousin.
Yeah, don't try me. Yeah, I can't follow.
I have like a sister wife somewhere. It's a whole thing.
An uncle daddy.
Yeah,
somewhere.
All of that. And but it was, I've never seen a really successful relationship, so that's why they seem so foreign to me. Because I'm like, I watch these shows, and I'm like, that's not true.
Yeah.
She's like, you just haven't seen one.
Right.
Like, and a lot of my friends have also been like, oh, this isn't working. So they've all moved in with me at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the big thing yesterday.
And does that change your outlook on marriage?
No, but it makes...
Is that kind of why you're seeing someone is to like...
Yeah.
Help that perspective?
Perspective... Vulnerability.
Yeah.
When you're a survivalist your whole life, you've only built walls around you so long that you still live with those walls even though you don't need them anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that too.
Yeah.
But it's crazy you guys are going to therapy as a band. That's so exciting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I know a lot of bands that do this. This isn't like something out of nowhere. We were advised that early on to do it. And it's like, it's even with, you know, if you're getting married, it's like premarital counseling. Like, let's make this bridge strong before there's a break in it. You know, that's kind of, it's not because something happened or like something will, you know, we should all be as prepared as we can be. And we care about it. We care about this and we care about each other enough to have the tools to not do damage while we're trying to build this thing. And then I see a therapist on my own, which I love it. It really, really helps me stay grounded. And, you know, we're in a tumultuous little business here. It's like very, very strange and different every day. And
guy or girl, your therapist?
Guy, it's a girl.
Or, yeah, mine's a woman too. Do you ever do? Oh, I was only raised by women. Mom, grandma. I was adopted by my grandmother for a while, so I only feel comfortable with older women telling me what to do. Yeah, that's kind of the move. Do you ever do the where they just sit and they're quiet at you, and you know, because that's a technique, right? And I also do it in this. But so since I talk to people and get things out of them with that technique, when she does it to me, she'll just sit there because silence.
Like, oh, I know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just sit and stare at her too. I'll wait her out. We'll staring game.
You know, the funny thing is that people love to talk about themselves. So it's like not if you just sit there and listen, like they'll tell you all kinds of stuff.
Well, I'll ice her out. She'll look at me, and I know the technique.
That's not what therapy is, Bobby.
You're also trying to win therapy.
Yeah, I'm trying to win therapy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm trying to win therapy. Here, let me roll through some quick answers here.
Okay.
Do you wear a GoPro when you downhill bike?
I have before. I just bought one, and I haven't used it yet.
Insane.
Yes.
I will see your Instagram stories on that bike, and I'm like, are you out of your mind? But that's a thing, huh, where you ride downhill really fast?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Have you ever done anything like that? Do you bike or anything?
Do anything like what?
Oh my God, stop. You're super athletic.
Dude, but that doesn't mean
I've never done this. You should go. You should go with me one day.
I can't injure things on me. If I
come on. I feel so alive, like I'm living.
Do they have bunny slopes? If you would take me to a bunny slope, I would do a bunny slope and then we would just
No,
work.
I'm sorry. You just got to get on the bike and go. You know, you don't try to hero it. Like if you see a huge jump, just don't do it. But yeah, it's been really fun. I've been to Whistler in Canada and Aspen, Jackson Hole, There's a little bike park around here, but like you.
That's
go up
what and, I would do.
Yeah, you
we
you
can
do
rent a bike. We can go to the
corner.
Little bike park, and then we can
I'm
do
like
that.
I'm like ready to put you on a bike yeah, and yeah, smack yeah. your ass. Go.
Your yeah. little bike, little hills,
little helmet.
Your style, yeah. Vintage stores or just really cool new stuff that looks old. What's what do we have here?
Oh, yeah, I use a mix of everything. Like I just kind of like I just wear what I like.
How about your Instagram post? Do you take a lot of the picture over and over again to find one, or are you just like, boom, there it is, that's the one?
What do you mean, like?
Well,
like
sure,
selfies?
Any picture at all. You know, do you like take 100 and I'll pick one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just seeing how earthy you are.
Seeing how real you are right now. How much do you filter it?
No, the realness is if you answer the question real, not in how you actually
okay.
do it. How do you feel about Instagram removing the likes?
I love it. I think it's so smart. I think that when I first started Instagram, it was all about the photos, which I love that. That's kind of why I don't have a Facebook page, and I haven't been on Facebook in years.
But we're friends on Facebook, and I just sent you money last week.
How do you send money on Facebook?
To you. I thought you needed it, and you're like, please send me some money.
Venmo me.
So I said, oh, crap.
Venmo me. I'm an influencer now, apparently.
Oh, crap.
Let me influence you.
Okay. I'm already influenced. I'm going to meditate. Okay. I'm going to drink beet jam or whatever you have over in this jar.
This is a nourishing herbal infusion.
Yeah, I'm so nourished.
I love that the likes are gone. I think that it's like this. There have been extensive studies shown that it's harmful to us. And I think that it's going to be like social media will be like our parents with smoking, you know, when they used to smoke in the car with the kids. Like no one really knew the damage that was doing until like we know and we're like, oh my God, it was gnarly that they would ask us smoking or not, like in a restaurant. You know, I think that's what our kids are going to say about social media.
I say the same thing about sugar. That same
sugar too. Man, what a gnarly thing.
That's going to be
terrible.
25 years. We're going to go.
Whoa, what were we
thinking?
Doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, let me say this. You should, I'm a big fan of Runaway June.
Thanks.
Big fan of you. You're a great singer.
Thank you.
Everyone should check out Blue Roses. And this thing lasts forever. You probably have 4 records out. People will be listening to this 5-6 years from now.
I hope so.
Check out Blue Roses, the record. I love We Were Rich. Hey, play some of the Fast As You cover, because this one.
Ooh, we played this last night.
I loved White Yoakum, and when I heard this, I was like, oh boy, it's real good.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's real good. It's real good.
Very much.
I know you had a long night last night. We've done an hour. Mm-hmm. This is it. We hit 1 hour here.
I hope some of this is usable.
It all goes up immediately. This is, it's all usable.
There's no editing.
There's no editing.
No filters.
No filters.
Okay.
So follow Naomi at Naomi_Cook on Instagram. That's right?
Yeah.
You know, somebody had Naomi Cook without the underscore?
Who had that?
I don't know. Why would you get the underscore? Nobody wants an underscore. Like you just
someone must have had it. I couldn't believe it.
Who runs the Runaway June page?
We do.
You're on it?
Clearly. It's a mess.
Do guys slide into your personal DMs all the time randomly?
I actually don't check my DMs anymore. It just would bum me out. It was big time bum out.
Because?
Well, I've never done any dating apps ever. And so it kind of started to feel like a dating app. Like I was just being hit up by like all kinds of people. It made me kind of feel like, whoa, there's just nothing natural left. And, I was like, I felt like I was being ordered like a pizza. I'm like, no, I just stopped.
Don't hate technology.
I don't hate it.
Don't hate technology.
There's been some good things that have happened, but, I really don't check my DMs. Like I'll talk to my fans in the comment section. 100%. Like you comment on something, I'll talk to you there. But get out of my DMs.
I comment on every picture and I never get a message back.
That's such BS.
It is BS. I don't comment. I should comment on stuff. I never do.
You don't comment on everything.
I know.
And I always acknowledge you there. I see
where?
If you comment on something.
Do I?
You have
I never
before.
Go back and look. Because Instagram.
Well, then why? What? What is this conversation? Why would I like your comment if you're not going to go back and see that I acknowledge
you? You'll comment on somebody's and go back and see if they've acknowledged your comment?
I mean, you get a little alert, don't you? Right?
Yeah. I have too many followers. I don't know.
God.
I know. Like a mild flex there. I'm so glad
that the likes got away. You're a product of this. I don't even know.
All right, here we are. Episode 212, Runaway June. Check out Blue Roses. Thank you for coming by.
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me. It was so fun.
How did it feel rolling solo doing an interview?
Felt felt pretty cool. With you, it felt good. I don't know. I can't say for other ones, though. Yeah.
Well, I say just rap. Never do another solo one ever. And also, let me say hi to Hannah and Jen. Love them. And yeah. I know they're not here. But they want to come in individually, too. You guys can all trash talk each other.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Oh,
we've cut out all the trash talking. By the way, if you're hearing this, we cut out all the trash talking.
We're in therapy. There's no trash talking outside. Yeah.
All right. Naomi, thank you.
Thanks, Bobby.